नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट नंबर 17 एंड 18 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द डेमिगॉड्स अपील टू द लॉर्ड निशाम्येतत् सुरगणा महेन्द्र वरुणादयः नाध्य गच्छन् स्वयं मन्त्रये मन्त्रयन्तो विनिश्चितम् ततो ब्रह्मसभां जग्मो मेरोर्मूर्धनि सर्वशः सर्वं विज्ञापयां चक्रु प्रणताः परमेष्ठिने नैषा ट्रांसलेशन लॉर्ड इंद्र वरुण एंड द अदर डेमिगॉड्स Seeing their lives in such a state, consulted among themselves, but they could not find any solution. Then all the demigods assembled and went together to the peak of Sumeru mountain. There, in the assembly of Lord Brahma, they fell down to offer Lord Brahma their obeisances, and then they informed him of all the incidents that had taken place. There's no purport, so we'll take the next two verses. Text 19 and 20, these are together. Savilokendra vayu adin nisatvan vigat prabhan lokanamangal prayan asuranayatha vibhu samahitena manasa samsmaran purusham param उवाचोत्फुल्ल वदनो देवांस भगवान परहा. Translation. Upon seeing that the demigods were bereft of all influence and strength, and that the three worlds were consequently devoid of auspiciousness, and upon seeing that the demigods were in an awkward position, whereas all the demons were flourishing, Lord Brahma, who is above all the demigods and who is the most powerful, concentrated his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus being encouraged, he became bright-faced and spoke to the demigods as follows. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada. After hearing from the demigods the real situation, Lord Brahma was very much concerned because the demons were unnecessarily so powerful. When demons become powerful, the entire world is placed in an awkward position, because demons are simply interested in their own sense gratification and not in the welfare of the world. Demigods or devotees, however, are concerned with the welfare of all beings. Srila Rupa Goswami, for example, left his ministership and went to Vrindavan for the benefit of the entire world. Lokanam hitakarino. This is the nature of a saintly person, a demigod. Even impersonalists think of the welfare of all people. Thus, Brahma was very much concerned at seeing the demons in power. Om Ajnana Timirandhas. Hare Krishna. I would sincerely like to seek the blessings of His Grace Jananivas Prabhu. and request him to accept whatever I speak simply as an offering unto his lotus feet for his pleasure. And please forgive any mistakes that I am definitely going to make. So kindly bless me. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girin yat kripatam ampande shri gurung dinatarinam. Lord Indra, Varuna and the other demigods, seeing their lives in such a state, consulted among themselves, but they could not find any solution. Then all the demigods assembled and went together to the peak of Sumeru mountain. There in the assembly of Lord Brahma, they fell down to offer Lord Brahma their obeisances, and then they informed him of all the incidents that had taken place. Upon seeing the demigods bereft of all of influence and strength, and that the three worlds were consequently devoid of auspiciousness, and upon seeing that the demigods were in an awkward position, whereas all the demons were flourishing, Lord Brahma, who is above all the demigods and who is the most powerful, concentrated his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus being encouraged, he became bright-faced and spoke to the demigods as follows. So this is the translation to verses 17 through 20. Of the fifth chapter of the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions a point with which I would like to begin. And before I begin, I would like to just mention that the time right now is 9 o'clock, and I've been informed that we can continue the class till 9:30. So kindly bear with us. Srila Prabhupada here mentions in the purport, this is the nature of a saintly person or demigod. Even impersonalists think of the welfare of all people. Thus, Brahma was very much concerned at seeing the demons in power. So, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, demigods or devotees are concerned with the welfare of all living beings. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has described the life and pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Chaitanya Bhagavat. And in the second chapter of the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi Khanda, he describes the advent of Lord Gauranga. And the description given by Vrindavan Das Thakur, I felt, was corroborating this very point that Srila Prabhupada is making. And with your permission, I would like to describe that which has been mentioned in the second chapter. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur says that Lord Brahma, at the beginning of creation, finding himself completely bewildered, he finally surrendered unto the Lord within his heart, upon which he received the mercy of the Lord, and then he could understand the purpose of everything. He could understand the creation, he could understand the Supreme Lord, he could understand how the laws of nature are working. And this very knowledge that he had received, he passed on to his descendants in disciplic succession, which today we receive as Srimad Bhagavatam, compiled by Srila Vyasadeva. Vrindavan Das Thakur says that to describe the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is impossible for a tiny, insignificant living entity to do. Compared to Lord Brahma, who am I? Says Vrindavan Das Thakur. Lord Brahma himself has spoken in the 10th canto that, oh my dear Lord, oh supreme Lord, oh the super soul of all that exists, O Lord of the universes. O the master of all mystics. It is impossible to understand where, how many, and when you expand your spiritual potency to perform your pastimes. How can an ordinary conditioned living entity understand? Therefore, Vrindavandas Thakur is saying that now I'm going to describe the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How is it possible that a living entity can even begin to describe why the Lord descends? One cannot glorify or one cannot properly understand why the Lord descends. Still, taking shelter of the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, I'll try to explain why the Lord descends. And he says in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, verse number 7 and 8, Krishna describes why he descends. Whenever there is a decline in religion and a rise in irreligion, to reestablish the principles of religion, I appear to protect the devotees and to destroy the demons. So in the age of Kali Yuga, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he quotes from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Gauranga has appeared to establish the principles of religion through the congregational chanting of the holy names. Lord Gauranga appeared in the holy land of Navadvip. How is it possible for anyone to describe the opulences of Navadvip? Hundreds upon thousands of people would gather every day on the banks of the Ganges to take their bath. This was how populated Navadvip was. Like in Bombay, we could say, if Vrindavandas Thakur would have described Bombay, would have said most probably that hundreds and thousands are gathering in local trains. So previously, everyone would come to take their bath in the river Ganges. So hundreds upon thousands of people would be there. This was how Navadvip was so popular. And this was how Navadvip was capable of supporting so many people through the resources that were available. The residents of Navadvip, being blessed by Goddess Saraswati, they were the most erudite scholars, exponents of all the Vedic literatures, very learned. These people, they were so proud of their material knowledge that even young boys would engage in logical debates on topics of Nyaya with very senior scholars. Students from all over the country would come to Navadvip because in Navadvip they were assured high training and a taste for scholastics or scriptures. Everyone who congregated to Navadvip, Vrindavandas Thakur says, the number of students in Navadvip was incalculable and the exact amount of teachers was undetermined. This was like the Oxford of the past, most probably, or the Cambridge. I'm just mentioning this because I've spent some time in Pune many years, and Pune is known as the Oxford of India. If you enter Pune district, even now there is a board on its borders. You're entering the Oxford of India. So Navadvip was so famous. Srila Vrindavandas Thakur explains that the residents of Navadvip were so content because they had received the favoring glances of Rama, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. But they wasted their time in spending a lot of money in material pursuits and other worldly affairs. And with the beginning of Kali Yuga, immoral attitude crept in. The only religious activity that was performed in Navadvip was, or what they thought was devotional activity, was the invocation for demigods and demigoddesses and prayers for material upliftment, betterment. Specifically, they would worship the goddess Durga in a form as Chandi or Vishula, Devi, and so on and so forth. Some of them arrogantly worship the goddess Manasa, the demigoddess of the mistress of the snakes. Some would waste large amounts of money in worshipping idols or dolls. Some would waste money in the marriages of their sons and daughters. And thus they were just engaged in wasting their human form of life. Even the so-called scholars, teachers of religion like the Bhattacharyas and the Chakravartis and the Mishras, they did not have any idea of the real import of the scriptures, although they were teaching the scriptures, and their behavior was contrary to scriptural injunctions. They only took the superficial gross meaning of the scriptures and taught it to their students, and teacher and students thus were only being bound further by the ropes of Yamaraj and being led towards hell. Nobody was engaged in explaining the imports of the congregational chanting of the holy names, the Yuga Dharma. Everyone was simply engaged in finding faults with each other. The so-called renunciates or hermits, one could never see them utter a single name of Lord Krishna because they had taken Maunvrat. The most pious people in the city were those who would once in a day take the names of Lord Krishna as Pundrikaksha or Govind. One of them, not both. Either one, they would take it ritually every day once at the time of the daily ablutions or their bath. And they were considered to be the most pious. Nobody had any inclination for any devotion to these lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Devotional perspectives in the explanation of scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita was totally absent. This was the state of Navadvip. Very popular, well known, famous people would come there to receive fame, to receive wealth, to receive opportunity to go ahead in materialistic endeavors or pursuits. But no one was inclined to understand devotional service. There were Vaishnavas also in Navadvip. The Vaishnavas, when they saw the state of the general populace, they were very much distressed. Out of great compassion, they thought, how will these people be liberated? They are so much caught up in the myth of material life that it is so difficult for them to think of anything else. Feeling great pain for the suffering of these people in material life, they simply prayed to Lord Krishna to shower his mercy on them. Elevated Vaishnavas, on the other hand, would regularly congregate. They would worship Lord Krishna. They would bathe in the Ganges and would discuss the pastimes of Lord Krishna. They were very much moved seeing the plight of the general populace. The foremost of the Vaishnavas was Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya was so proficient in explaining the scriptures. When he spoke and explained the meaning of the scriptures, it was as if Lord Shiva himself was speaking. Lord Shiva is a Mahajan. And his conclusions, whichever scripture he was giving his discourse on, his conclusions was always the same: to surrender unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Advaita Acharya, being the leader of all the Vaishnavas, would be regularly engaged in his own practice of spiritual discipline, chanting of the holy names and reading and discussing Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures which delineate the pastimes of Lord Krishna. However, he felt acute pain seeing the distress of all the citizens of Navadvip. People are mad after sense gratification. They had no inclination for an iota of devotional service. Some of them are worshipping Chandi, the others are worshipping the yakshas with flesh and wine. Many of them would be drowned in singing and dancing and music, deaf to the chanting of the holy names, to the call of the holy names of the Lord. Seeing this state, Advaita Acharya was extremely unhappy, especially seeing their mode of worship of the demigods and demigoddesses. In great compassion, one day Advaita Acharya said, I will make my Lord appear in this world. When my Lord appears, he will liberate all of them. My name is Advaita Simha. Advaita the lion. But my name will be justified only when I'll make the Supreme Lord appear, the beloved Lord of Vaikuntha appear within this material universe. When the Lord appears in this universe in person, everyone will be singing and dancing, and thus everyone will be liberated. Advaita Acharya would worship his deities, the Shaligram Shila, regularly with water from the Ganga and Tulsi leaves, Tulsi manjaris, and would call out loudly for the Lord to appear in this world. His cries for the Lord of Vaikuntha to appear pierced the material coverings. It went beyond the abode of Lord Brahma and entered the realms of Vaikuntha, right to where the Lord was lying on his bed of Shesha. His sound vibration captured the Lord and made him appear in this world. Thus Vrindavan Das Thakur explains the appearance of Lord Gauranga. Then Vrindavan Das Thakur in this chapter further on goes to say, Advaita Acharya was so much concerned with the people wasting their time, seeing how they were engaged in material pursuits and fruitive endeavor for material knowledge, materialistic knowledge, that with undeviated resolve to bring the Lord of the universe into this world, he engaged in worshipping the Lord and the chanting of the Lord's names. And the Lord, he appeared within this world, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared within this world simply because of the sincere plea of Advaita Acharya. So this is the second instance that Vrindavan Das Thakur is repeating the same thing. The first time he says that his cries pierced the universe and captured the Lord and made him appear. Then he goes on to describe again the situation in Abadweep. And then he mentions that this again made Advaita Acharya with undeviating resolve worship the Lord of Vaikuntha and make him appear again. By his sincere plea, the Lord appeared. Then Vrindavan Das Thakur explains that in Navadvip, Srivas Thakur and his brothers, they were constantly engaged in worshipping Lord Krishna, chanting his holy names, bathing in the Ganges 3 times a day and 3 times a day engaging in their devotional activities, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Also in Navadvip were other devotees like Sri Jagadish, Gopi Nath, Ganga Das and others, Chandrasekhar Acharya, whom the Lord had inspired them to appear before him. All of these devotees, not knowing their own identities or the identities of each other, would constantly be engaged in their spiritual discipline. They would come together and chant the holy names. They try to come together, and because they would find no one else in Navadvip engaged in hearing Lord Krishna's pastimes, they would congregate together amongst themselves and discuss Lord Krishna's activities and glories. When these devotees saw the world in flames, they wanted to give all the citizens, all the residents, an opportunity to practice devotional service. However, they could not find any opportunity to give it to them. For whenever they would offer them a chance to chant the holy names, they flatly refused. Everyone in Navadvip just refused to do so. For they were foolishly engaged only in trying to get more power, trying to get more wealth, and thus becoming more and more proud and materialistic. When the devotees saw that nothing was working, they would gather at the house of Advaita Acharya and they would beg him with tears in their eyes that please do something for these conditioned living entities. Hearing their pleas, and Advaita Acharya himself feeling very much compassionate, for his nature was being very compassionate, he was so much stricken with grief that Advaita Acharya decided to go on fast. He started fasting and crying out for the Lord to appear in this world. Seeing this, the Vaishnavas sighed deeply. So again, the third time, Vrindavan Das Thakur is explaining how Advaita Acharya is calling out for the Lord. Then Vrindavan Das Thakur goes on to say, Shivas Thakur and his brothers would be engaged in loud chanting of the holy name, so much so that the neighbors would feel that they were being disturbed, for it would disturb their activities of singing, dancing, music. So they would shout at Shivas Thakur that your loud chanting will attract the Muslim invaders, the Muslim rulers, the Muslim soldiers. They will come and they will not only capture you, but they'll destroy the whole village. Because of you, we will also be destroyed. Let us just tear the house of Shivas Thakur down and throw it into the Ganges. Only when Shivas Thakur is gone from Navadvip can we be free from the fear of these Muslim invaders. When the devotees heard this, they wept tears that these people are so envious. What can we do for them? When Advaita Acharya heard this, he roared in rage. He was so agitated that he was unaware that his clothes were slipping from his body, unaware of his dress. Advaita Acharya roared loudly. He said, "Listen, Shivas, Gangadas, O Shri Shuklambar, listen to me. I will make Lord Krishna appear in front of the eyes of everyone. When Krishna comes in this material world, he'll liberate everyone. In the association of you Vaishnavas, he will teach the atheists Krishna Prem. And if my promise fails, I promise you that I'll make Lord Krishna appear. And if my promise fails, then I will myself assume my four-handed form and take my chakra and with my chakra kill all the atheists. In this way, I will establish that Lord Krishna is my master and I am his eternal servitor. Saying so, Advaita Acharya thought deeply and resolved within himself to bring Lord Krishna within this world. Thus, finally, the Supreme Lord Gauranga, seeing the distress of his own devotees and their cries for him to appear, he descended into this world. And then Vrindavan Das Thakur goes on to explain the appearance of Lord Nityananda first and then on Lord Gauranga. So, why doesn't Vrindavan Das Thakur is a very erudite writer? I mean, reading myself when I was reading the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and since there is not much attraction for Lord Gauranga's pastimes, the same fact being repeated 4 times is a little boring. What to speak of hearing it? How does Vrindavan Das Thakur do it? Does he want to fill in the pages? Maybe Vrindavan Das Thakur is actually experiencing the compassion that the devotees are feeling, Advaita Acharya is feeling. And he is not satisfied explaining their mood of compassion through just once giving that situation. He is not satisfied explaining it twice. Only after 4 times does he feel that, yes, now maybe I feel satisfied, or maybe it is all right to go ahead. And therein comes the supreme compassion of Vrindavan Das Thakur. For their mood is the welfare of all living beings. This mood of compassion is very important. It is an integral part of a devotee's qualities, the ornaments that decorate a devotee. Many a times, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj in his lectures explains that Srimati Radharani, her entire existence is summed up. I'm not quoting him as it is, but paraphrasing what he's saying, is summed up by saying that in 3 words, love for Krishna, that is it. There's no one who can ever have love for Krishna as much as Sri Radhika has. And that very love of Srimati Radharani in this world is experienced, or it manifests in the form of compassion towards all living entities to give them a chance to become Krishna conscious and go back home, back to Godhead. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada here says, even impersonalists think of welfare of all people, what to speak of devotees? So he's making this very important point. So compassion here is being felt by Vrindavan Das Thakur. We find that compassion is being felt by Advaita Acharya, by all the devotees. In fact, Vrindavan Das Thakur goes on to explain that devotees felt so much distress seeing
seeing everyone burning in the fire of material life, that some of them gave up eating. Some of them thought that maybe we should just give up our lives, for there's no one wanting to chant Krishna's names. Some of them simply cried tears and opened their hearts to Krishna, for they could open their hearts to no one else. Some of them were just shocked. They couldn't do anything. These are the manifestations of someone who has intense compassion, seeing the suffering of conditioned souls. We find that the demigods here are also in distress. But that is not all. Because the demigods are in distress, and the process by which all living entities, when they cooperate with the demigods in the process of exchange of benefits, we give you something in sacrifice, you give us something in return, and thus both of us live happily, as explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Because that was lost, everyone in the three worlds was suffering. And the only people who were prospering were the demons, because demons, their happiness to see others suffer. That is a prosperity. So the demigods, they approach Lord Brahma, and Brahmaji is feeling compassion, and that is what brings me to my second point, is that many a times we have heard of Lord Brahma, and we have so many times immediately, out of everything else that appears in the minds of those who are acquainted with Lord Brahma from the scriptures, we think of his mistakes. Oh, Lord Brahma, the one who caused pain to all the residents of Vrindavan. We remember the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Or we remember from CC the pastime where Lord Brahma became a little proud and came to Dwaraka. And then Krishna showed him so many other Brahmas. And he said, oh my God, there are many Brahmas here. Who doesn't among us know all these pastimes? How many of us know Lord Brahma's entire process of creation? So immediately these things come up. The faults in someone, defects in someone, the mistakes someone has made. However, the point is, the only persons to whom we can go in distress is someone who is a devotee. And it is but natural that there are going to be defects. Who doesn't have defects in this world? But only when we go and we are in a situation where we can extract from a devotee his compassion, then that will result in the Supreme Lord giving his mercy. Yes, there will be many situations where we can see many lackings in devotees, like we see in Lord Brahma. Indra and the others are not thinking, oh, this is Brahma who made mistakes. Maybe because their distressful situation is such that they think that this is the only hope, whatever it is. So the second point is that the only hope for us in a distressful situation, and this material world is a distressful situation, is a place of distress. That will be my third point. So in our present situation, we need the help of devotees, and we will be very much, we will fail if we try to find out and receive the mercy of only a pure devotee, for we have no idea of who a pure devotee is or how to recognize a pure devotee. So in our neophyte state, if we go to seek a mercy of the devotees simply because we think that they are pure devotees, and we reject the mercy of other devotees because we think they are not pure because they have these lackings like Lord Brahma has, then the only persons who are going to suffer is us. We miss the opportunity. So here the demigods see this opportunity and they approach Lord Brahma for his mercy. Why? Because this material world is, as Prahlad Maharaj says, padam padam yat vipat. There's always distress. There's always problems in this material world. As I was coming in for this lecture, Madan Gopal Prabhu, he told me some point about, he said, if you are going to mention this point, padam padam yat vipat, I want to tell you something that happened just yesterday. He goes to preach in a place called Chiplun. So he explained this It happens almost every day. Maybe we go to some city and we'll find some story similar. But then again, it's very interesting. At least to our ears, sometimes it seems very interesting. So there is this family, there is an old father, some disease, maybe cancer, or maybe just old age, the father dies. Chiplun is a place maybe 200 miles from here or more. So the son is in Bombay, the father is there. So the daughter, whose father has died, she sends a message to her brother in Bombay. Brother receives the message. He gets into a vehicle, a Scorpio, a Jeep, a van, travels to Chiplun, immediately wants to be there. On the way, meets with an accident. Brother dies. So instead of brother coming, the body comes to Chiplun. So the father is dead, the son is dead. Now, the sister is seeing both these bodies, dead bodies. Her husband comes. He hears the news. The father-in-law is dead. Then he sees brother-in-law is dead. This is such a shock for him. He gets a heart attack and he dies. So now this lady, her father's dead, her husband's dead, her brother's dead. Now when I heard this story, I said, oh my God, such tragedy. But it didn't click to me, what if I am faced with such a tragedy? It doesn't come. But this material world is like that. Padam padam yat vipat. There's a nice short, jovial story from the Western world. God once empowered someone like Noah to build an ark. He gave a person this opportunity. You build an ark and take all species within that ark, for the world is going to be flooded. So he did that. He got all the species. There was one donkey, and it's time to pull in the donkey. The donkey wouldn't come in. So pull as he might, the donkey was very obstinate, wouldn't come in. So he got a little agitated and he said, come on, you devil, come in. So after a lot of endeavors, the donkey comes in. He closes the gate, turns around and sees that the devil is inside the ark. Why? Because he just mentioned, come on, you devil, you come in. Now we don't want the devil to come in. But that is a material world. We never know how the senses will act, what will speak, how will behave. And immediately the reaction is there. Padam padam yat vipat. So this material world is a burning fire of distress. And the only hope is to seek out the mercy of devotees. And finally, want to just quote Srila Prabhupada's quote from the Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada mentions this point and says, in this material world, at every step, there is going to be some problems. Again, I'm paraphrasing this. Therefore, it behooves one to take the shelter of a spiritual master. Always. It behooves one. Now, for our understanding, a spiritual master could represent just one particular personality, or spiritual master represents the Guru Tattva or Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. Depends on how we take it. That is how we'll receive the mercy. If we are only after the externals, then that is what we get. The gross meaning of the scriptures. But if we want something deep, if we want the essence, then we have to take the shelter of the Pancha Tattvas. We have to take shelter of the Guru Tattva. So Durvasa Muni here has again engineered a pastime. And somehow or the other, if we hear about Durvasa Muni, there is some fear in the heart. Because he's known to, Durvasa Muni has done this, Durvasa Muni, so many times. Well, there is one instance where I can remember that he has also blessed, he blessed Duryodhan, he was happy with him, but he had also blessed Kunti Devi as a young child. But otherwise we hear of Durvasa Muni, generally someone offends him and he curses. But that is, considering from one point of view, Durvasa Muni is Lord Shiva, his expansion. Lord Shiva represents the principle of destruction, doesn't he? So when Durvasa Muni is cursing, the principle of destruction is there. Let all your material aspirations be destroyed. And therefore, for devotees, this is a wonderful opportunity. It is actually a blessing. And thus we see that whenever Durvasa Muni extends pastimes, activities like this, the end result is always very glorious. It results either in the Supreme Lord appearing, it results in devotees becoming glorious, or the activities of devotional service being glorified. And again, we should never take personalities externally. If we can understand the principle that they are, this is called Jnana Chakshu, the principle that they represent, then we can see that everything in this material world is simply arranged such that all the living entities can give up any hope of happiness in this material world through sense gratification, giving up the shelter of Krishna. It has all been designed that we can give up all such hope and seek shelter of Krishna, knowing that only happiness or satisfaction is at his lotus feet and at the lotus feet of his devotees or in association of his devotees. As Advaita Acharya has spoken, Vrindavan Das Thakur writes, he says, in your association, Lord Krishna will appear. In your association, O Vaishnavas, Lord Krishna will appear and he will give Krishna prem even to the atheists. So, this verse here, today's four verses we covered, Durvasa Muni has been offended by Lord Indra. Because of that, he curses him to lose all his opulence. Due to that, the world has lost its opulence. It is in distress. The demigods find no other option, have gone to Lord Brahma. Now Brahma will be, he is meditating on the Lord within his heart. He has gained some communication with the Lord. Therefore, his face becomes bright-faced. And now he is going to explain to the demigods how the Supreme Lord is going to resolve their distress. Now this will explain the appearance of Lord Ajita, whose appearance Sukhdev Goswami is describing to Parikshit Maharaj in reply to his question, my dear Lord, how did this Lord Ajita appear? Why did he support the Mandara mountain? How did the churning of the milk ocean take place? So in reply to that question, this today's answer is a part of the total answer given by Sukhdev Maharaj. Thank you very, very much. Hare Krishna. Janani Vyas Prabhu, would you please give some comments? Any corrections? Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Tai Gaura Premanande.